Okay, the Board of Education meeting for February 13th, 2012 will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Decker, please call the roll.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Here.
Mr.
Smith?
Here.
Mr. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here.
Mrs. Here. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Seeing none. We have presentations, reports, and initiatives updates.
Well, we are very excited to be at Handley this evening, and you are going to be privileged to see a Prezi. A new type of presentation, similar to PowerPoint, but a little bit different. And I'm not going to waste much time. I'm going to let Chris introduce your speakers this evening and the nature of the presentation.
I guess I'll start by saying thanks for the opportunity. And the technology tonight is something that our teachers learned at the professional development opportunity in January. And they were pretty excited about it. Some of our folks have used this technology or this program already in their own graduate work presentations and have spoken about how much it's impressed folks. And we hope you'll enjoy the content as much as the glitz of the program. So we're going to share our initial experiences working with our new three-year school improvement plan, which deals with writing across the content areas with an emphasis on higher-order thinking skills. I'm going to be joined tonight by our BLT co-chair, Stephanie Spisterics, and Kayla Wheeler, one of our literacy specialists. We're going to share a few things, the goal and how it was developed. We're going to share with you some of the tools that have been created this year and some of the ways they've been used. Get you some insights and actually testimonials, so to speak, from teachers and students from their experiences so far this year, and show you some examples of their work as well. I'd like to just put this into a little bit of a broader context, though. In November of 2010, which was the last time we presented to the board, our presentation focused on our new teaming model and on our program of student progress monitoring. And you might remember that our teaming structure now is made up of course-alike teachers. We call them learning teams. You'll hear them referred to in the presentation as both learning teams and PLCs, but it's the same thing. It's a professional learning community, a collaborative group, work group that we term for the most part learning teams, who have common plan time, common expectations, and the expectations focus on learning and results within a collaborative culture. The teaming model lends itself well to the work that's involved in our writing goal. All the team members have the same purpose, using the same information, and the structure has made it expedient for staff-like specialists to collaborate with teachers and support their efforts to strengthen writing and higher-order thinking skills. What you will now hear and see will give you some insight into how the teaming model is resulting in more rigorous academic experiences for our students. And I will bring up Stephanie now, who will talk about how the BLT developed the goal.
Okay, so at the end of last school year, we were looking at our past three-year plan and trying to decide where we wanted to head for the 2011 to 2014 school year. And some factors that we considered, because we originally had a reading goal, a writing goal, a building goal, and math goals. And then every department had a goal separately and that we were tracking and monitoring, but they weren't really a part of our total plan. So some factors we considered were that we had been working with Jeff Boyd over at Lombard West, and just trying to work on articulation with the high school. And even though they mentioned that District 41 students were very high performing compared to the other feeder schools, going into it, they were reminding us of some gaps in some writing and some differences in note-taking and study skills. So that's kind of where our conversation began in the direction we wanted to head. We also knew that for ISATs, the written response portions, items rarely were our students scoring fours consistently on the ideas and organizations. That was another area that we were looking at. And as a building, we really just wanted a common focus, that we can all be on the same page. So the three goal areas that we stuck to were, first, the student learning, doing whatever it takes to make sure each and every one of our students are successful and they can succeed and learn while they're here at Hadley. Focusing on the school climate, making sure that it's safe, supportive, and inviting for all of our students, which is PBIS, the bullying, all of that stuff. And then the new goal was on our writing. And this was for all departments. And as Chris briefly mentioned, it's focusing on the ideas and organization in writing to demonstrate writing proficiency as measured by the district writing assessment for our literacy teachers and the understanding of content area concepts and higher order thinking through written responses on course common assessments, both formative and summative by all the department areas. So we've been doing a lot of work with this year, and it's been fun, and you'll hear about it in the rest of the presentation. Here's Kayla.
As Stephanie mentioned, ideas and organization, that had been part of a literacy goal for several years. To reiterate what Stephanie had said also about the our performance on the extended response on the ISAT, we felt we had really good writers, but very often that did not come through in the performance on the extended response. And when we looked at the data, it seemed mostly having to do with ideas and organization, ideas about using text evidence to support your answer, and the ideas and organization of having that beginning, middle, and end. So that goal actually segued very nicely into the school-wide goal. And this was how the literacy, several years ago when we were working on our goal setting, this is sort of how we developed our template. Many other departments use the same template, but this directly referred to ideas and organization and the steps that we were going to be taking. So for us, the building-wide goal became just even greater focus on our work and able to talk to other content areas about those same goals as well. I have been, I think this is my 6 years being a literacy specialist at Hadley, and it's always been my goal to work very closely with content area teachers, and I would often hear content area teachers talking about how the other areas like literacy and math had specialists, but they did not. And that was something that I worked very hard to change the perception, because we were everybody's specialists. We were there for everyone. But when the Common Core standards became published and we became very focused on adapting the Common Core standards, it became an easy way to get into the door of the content areas. They knew that writing and reading and the whole component of literacy was going to be very important to their content area as well. And it was sort of the door opening when the Common Core standards became a focus for literacy and the school. And this is not a screenshot. This is Sputnik. I sort of feel like the literacy specialists at Hadley are the satellites of the school. We pick up information from the PLC, the content area team meetings that we go to, and then we carry it to other content area team meetings. Whether it's different content or a different grade level, we're very intent on communicating the same sort of information across the content areas, across the grade levels. We developed a graphic organizer that is very much what the ISAT expected on the extended response, except we tailored it a little bit more to our needs. Very often our students will ask us, well, how long does it have to be? And our response has stopped being, well, it needs to be, you know, sufficient, it needs to be 3 pages long, 5 paragraphs long. Instead, we talk to the kids about the beginning, middle, and end. And what's nice about this graphic organizer is it fits no matter what content area the students are writing in. As you can see at the top, it says, why do we have to be aware of safety rules in a science classroom? So this was a graphic organizer that sixth grade used to get their students to write and focus on the beginning, the organized middle, which includes evidence, then what does that all mean, and then the ending, the concluding statement. And as a result of that, these are rubrics that were developed. It uses the language of the Common Core directly. And again, it focuses on ideas and organization, and it brings in the language of beginning, middle, and end, which you feel very much has become a common language that spreads across all the content areas. All the kids are talking about beginning, middle, and end. This is one that rubric that was used for health class. And this one is a more student-friendly one using ICANN statements, but again, all the language comes from the Common Core standards, from the ELA standards. And we interviewed several teachers and how they feel writing is being approached in their classrooms this year.
Hey, teacher here at Hadley. I wanted to take a few minutes and talk to you about my experiences with implementing the Common Core into my content area. I've always thought implementing any kind of reading or writing into my health content, my health curriculum was important. I do quick writes in the beginning of class and classroom summary sheets to summarize what's going on. I do short answer questions and essays, and I try to ask those higher level thinking questions to really provoke those short answer responses. But when the whole Common Core was coming out, I felt I probably needed to see if I could, try to meet those goals and those standards and incorporate more writing into my class. So I thought I was going to talk to Kayla Wheeler, our literacy specialist. And shortly after that, she kind of contacted our department and gave us all a copy of these, the Common Core standards for technical subjects, which I'm considered. So she gave us this, and I looked through it and decided that I could probably implement some more standard on writing an argumentative piece and an informative piece into my content, just replacing some of the current assessments that I do. So I first wanted to meet with Kayla again to figure out where I should expect the sixth graders to be. I teach sixth grade health, so I wanted to know, what should my expectations be, where should they be at with their writing. I also wanted to know kind of the lingo that the other sixth grade literacy teachers were using, so I was on the same page as them and I wouldn't be confusing any of the kids and just trying to keep it across the board the same. So I met with Kayla and she helped me with that, and then the next step was to develop some graphic organizers and rubrics to go with these new writing pieces I was going to be doing. I really wanted to, without the literacy background, I really wanted to learn how to teach the literacy piece, so to speak, kind of having them demonstrate their knowledge of the health content through their writing. So after meeting with Kayla many, many times, she's been so helpful through this process. I was able to do three different writing pieces last semester, and I just feel even more confident doing it now this semester, which just started last week. My next steps really are to continue. I talk with my learning team, the sixth grade science teachers, keep working with them, keep working with the literacy teachers and Kayla to try to make sure, I'm implementing strategies the way I should be, and I use this book, The Right Source, which was given to me. I reference that too, which helps me understand how to incorporate the literacy and the reading and writing strategies into my class. And really, it's been an up and down experience, a lot of obstacles, but it's been a fun roller coaster. I mean, I feel like the kids are really enjoying the challenge, and I enjoy incorporating the writing into my class. And my goals are next year. Right now, I'm just assessing them on health content through their writing, and I'd like to incorporate some of these Common Core standards and actually assess them on their writing skills in my class. So that's kind of my goal and where I'm headed, and it's been a positive experience. So that's what's going on with me and the health content. Thanks for listening.
Over the last few years, my colleagues and I have basically set up to incorporate a lot more writing because what we've come to realize is that there's several benefits from it. First off is it forces students to think critically. A test, a multiple choice, restating, memorizing information isn't going to force the student to think critically. However, through writing, they're forced to expand on their ideas, explain their thinking, showing metacognition, and really developing those 21st century standards. Also, it allows for us to make connections cross-culturally, or cross-curricularly, that I can work with the literacy department on the goals that they're working on, the students can work on in here as well, just with my content. And even bringing in ideas from science and math, and being able to incorporate that through writing and reading that has not been done in the past with social studies. On top of that, it allows for more creativity and self-expression rather than fill out this form, fill out this worksheet. Students are allowed to expand on their thinking, explain what they're thinking, and really justify the decisions that they make. my class, we focus in a lot more on not what's the answer, but why did you come to that answer? You know, we'll look at rather than saying, how old do you have to be to become president, or what are the qualifications, we'll look at, would this person make a good candidate? Why or why not? And students will have to expand on that rather than just simply know, oh, you have to be 35, you have to, you know, live in the U.S. for 14 years to be a natural born citizen. So it allows students, and forces students to think outside the box and become more critical thinkers. As far as the amount of writing and types of writing that are done, in my class we try to do writing every single day. Our PLC meets and we try to discuss what we're doing, and across 7th grade we're trying to incorporate writing every day. We do what's called a RACT, it's role, audience, format, topic, in which the student takes on a particular role, they have a particular audience that they're addressing, a format that they're writing in, and a topic that they're discussing. This again forces them to think about the history content, but more importantly it focuses in on their critical thinking and their expanding and clarity of their writing. Rather than just, again, what date did this event happen on? What happened at the bus massacre week? It forces them to put themselves in the shoes of someone from that time period and be able to really show their understanding. Students also create journal entries as if they're people in history or writing to people in the past. They've created newspaper articles from different time periods and have to think from different viewpoints. Every test has short answer sections. They've created children's stories. They've created Facebook pages, which might not seem like it's writing, but they do have to still be using those critical thinking skills to create the different answers. And right now, as a PLC, we're working towards our first common essay, which we want students to incorporate everything they're learning in literacy, have the evidence, interpretation, all that stuff, but using it just specific to our content. None of this would have been possible just on my own. I do writing almost every day, but most of it I get from my PLC, working with them on their ideas. But also, Kayla has been a huge help. She will give us everything we need. She's created rubrics for us, created questions, created different outlines, different charts for them to fill out. If you don't like it or think a little tweak needs to be made, she's back the next week and has made all of that. Sent us all the standards, everything we need to make this a lot easier. You know, by myself, I wouldn't be able to do any of that stuff, but she's able to create that stuff, which makes it a lot easier to incorporate into our class. And then finally, the literacy teachers, working with them, figuring out what skills the 7th graders are working on, how can I incorporate it into my lessons, and even going as far as planning common lessons as we've done. A research project that they're doing in their literacy class that deals with the Bill of Rights, and they time it out to when we're studying the Bill of Rights, so certain content things can be done in my class and writing can be done in their class, or even vice versa, that they can work out certain writing skills in here, and certain days they're getting more content from social studies actually in their literacy class. So what it has done is actually brought the school more together, and I think it helps the students realize that all this is connected, that writing across the curriculum, good writing is good writing. It's not literacy writing. It's not social studies writing. Here's how I write in science. Good writing is good writing, which is a skill that they're going to need to possess no matter what they go on to do. Whether they're working at McDonald's or being the president, they're going to have to get their thoughts out clearly, concisely, in a manner that makes sense. So it's not something that I think is just a kind of drift that's going to happen. I think it's the direction that we're heading towards. So our PLC has embraced it, and I think it's made a world of difference in understanding how well the students actually understand the content.
Okay, well, I think we've always used writing across the curriculum in science, but we've just sort of become a little bit more aware now and put more of an emphasis on it. So instead of just, you know, doing things like lab reports or small short answer questions, we now focus a little bit more on these. Sure, we incorporate at least one writing project per unit, and also with all of our major assessments, to make sure we incorporate some writing there as well, so that students are able to really explain their thinking, whether it's an essay question or something like that. But even more than that, I think what we've done is really spent a lot more time using our literacy specialist skills and asking them to help us form plans that will really incorporate the writing. And I know Kayla Wheeler has been amazing in helping us work with rubrics and coming up with ideas in order to incorporate all of Bloom's taxonomy into our questions. And then the other thing that I think is an ongoing process right now in science is that we're really trying to use common terminology when it comes to writing for the students that they hear in literacy as well, and trying to incorporate as many of the elements that they hear and do in literacy and bring it over to science so that they really see that connection, so that they don't think that, you know, science is a completely separate entity. We want to make sure that they understand that writing is found everywhere. And I think that this year especially, we've heard the kids talking about it a lot more and saying things like, hey, you did that in literacy, or, you know, our literacy teacher talks about that. So hopefully we're making some progress, and I think we'll continue to do so as we continue to work with the literacy specialists and try to coordinate with the literacy teachers. That's going really well. I love seeing the kids are doing.
Hi, I'm Allison Farmer, and I'm a sixth grader at Hadley Junior High. And I was going to talk about how we've incorporated writing in our science classes. Almost every week, or sometimes even more than that, we go to our AHA Connections page for our journal, which is where we talk about what we've learned about in class, some of the new key terms we've learned, and the tools we use in science. And this is kind of fun because it comes out of a light bulb, and we have a general question to answer, which would then later be turned into a graphic organizer, where we can basically set up our ideas into a format where it has like a beginning, with a middle which contains of like what we're talking about in connection to real life, and then a conclusion where we can extend and have more expansions in our writing. This is a little like the writing we do in literacy. It's just a little different because in literacy, we don't exactly have the same type of planning. We do plan, but it's like on a fiction map, and we then do an outline, and we turn it into multiple rough drafts and into a final. Kind of like what we do in science. I mean, we do have a plan, and then an organizer, and then final essay. But there's like one focus, and we can be more creative in literacy, whereas in science, we have a question that has to be answered. For me, we have really, well, at least I've only been here 1 year, but the science has had a lot more writing than it did in elementary school, which I enjoy because I find writing fun. And it's been pretty helpful because it helps us learn more about what we're trying to, I guess, get from our teachers, and when we have to connect to the real world, and thereon, or like further to make more, just switch our brain ourselves, it kind of helps us think more about what we're trying to learn, if we can have something to put it with. Yeah, it's been pretty good, and I really enjoy the writing.
And then this year there's a goal of writing across the whole curriculum, and I just wanted to know, have you noticed anything different about writing in your science classes?
Well, in my science class, we get a lot more projects where we elaborate on our labs and things, and we write up lab reports, so far we've done a beginning and a middle, and like in our writing now, I'm able to elaborate more on topics, not only that are literacy topics, but also now science topics.
Have you noticed those different things about writing in your social studies class?
Definitely. We have these short responses that we're supposed to write, and they really help us to go in more depth with the information, and I think that's really helpful with our writing because we need to understand the topic, and we have it all in like a writing format.
So before, you and Adam just mentioned that the small things you learned in literacy writing you brought to your social studies and your science writing.
Well, probably the biggest thing that I've learned from LA that I bring into my social studies and science sentence is a topic sentence because it really helps to organize our writing. It helps me to get the points across no matter what the topic is. And it always helps just to organize the paragraphs and everything. It's really helpful. So I think, yeah. And also vocabulary, definitely. The vocabulary really helps to develop the paper.
And how do you think, in the future of this program, how do you think you will, are you prepared for your high school writing, do you think?
I definitely think I am, because now I have the basic tools to get me to higher level writing. And I think it's definitely good.
Thank you very much, Emma.
Thank you.
You know how the teacher best is to talk about writing in the curriculum and such?
Yeah, what do you teach about that?
I feel like, especially in eighth grade, we've done a lot more writing in science and social studies than we have ever had before.
Definitely, like in science, instead of just writing out a few questions in your lab report. In social studies, instead of taking notes all the time, you've got paragraphs or essays.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I kind of like it. Like, it's just different. It's more interesting than just sitting there taking notes and going over the same type of thing. Like, we actually get to construct what we're learning in the paper.
What do you think? Do you think in classes like history or biology next year that'll help us?
Oh, yeah. Especially from what I've heard from, like, my friends who are already in high school, they do a ton of writing. So to start getting used to that now is definitely a huge benefit.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's nice because especially our language arts teachers have taught us so much about writing that now we get to use it.
Yeah, and it's nice because we've kind of been learning all this stuff throughout the years. We haven't really done anything with it. Now we get to use it and have fun.
Yeah. Is there anything else you think that really is useful about finally writing score in social studies and science?
It makes you analyze what you're learning, especially in science. It makes you analyze your data and you make connections to things that sometimes you wouldn't normally make connections to. And social studies, especially, just drills the facts and dates and times into your brain because you have to support everything with evidence.
I agree. What do you think about the subjects like PE or math and writing in those subjects?
PE? I don't think we should be writing. I think it's a physical education. Kind of like the only part of the day when we don't have to write. But math, I guess you could kind of write, but I don't really know what you write about.
I think we've done less of it in those classes, but I think the classes that are around there have focused on writing.
I would totally agree with you.
Yeah.
And we just have some exemplars for you to view. And they actually come from some of those graphic organizers that we had shown before. Finishing up that more evidence and that interpretation, I think you heard almost all the students refer to that evidence and that interpretation, and certainly the beginning, middle, and end. This extension part on the ISAT writing is a critical piece for the synthesis, showing what you've really learned and what all of this means. And I believe that this is the area that really shows the understanding of the content and the learning that's taken place. Again, the beginning, middle, and end. The questions, I believe this came from the sixth grade science metric unit. I appreciate the student typed it. What I like about this too is that kids are very used to seeing this graphic organizer in literacy, and now it's something that they've seen in health, in social studies, in science. And then next steps.
Dr. How do you make a slight qualification for one of the statements? I think the PE department was here and the math department were here. They did for a little bit with the interpretation of the two young ladies there. And I can tell you that I've seen in PE, they've worked hard this year to incorporate writing into their work. And SIP mornings is when they typically give their assessments, and their assessments are often involving writing. And they've told me how the kids comment to them, this is a PE class, why are we writing? Mm-hmm. So
there is writing going on there, and there has been writing going on for quite some time in math classes with the extended responses. But I know that the teachers have worked to include higher order thinking types of questions into the homework in addition to their assessments. So that is going on. I'm going to have to check these girls' schedules and see who they've been going to. Our next steps are really this first year, we're going to have a template that the learning teams and the departments will use in April and May to document some basic things like the kinds of writing experiences that they've given to students, the number of them, how many of them are formative pieces, how many of them are summative pieces, at what level of thinking did they require students to write, and then what were the results, and what have there been their results over time, how have they seen the writing grow. And so we're going to gather that benchmark data for this year and then build on that, because what we want to see is a nice balance of both the formative and the summative, and we want to see a consistent reflection of those higher order thinking skills in the kinds of questions, both whether it's a short answer question, a more extended question, or a more lengthy 1, 2, or 3 page paper. We're also going to continue to build on the articulation with Glenbard West. As I think Stephanie mentioned, Jeff Boyd, assistant principal for curriculum there, has been very interested in working with us. And it's really been a two-way street. We've been helping them with some things, and they're helping us with some things. So they're very interested in that, and we're gonna build on those efforts. So I think at this point, we'll open it up for any questions or comments you might have.
Thank you.
I would just like to suggest, and I think I've done this before, when we see explanations like Brian gave and Michelle Casper's, you know, I mean, really talking about digging into the curriculum, I think that those are such great tools to put on our website so that community members and parents can really hear teachers in-house articulating what is it that your child is doing when they're at school. And I think there's a disconnect. And especially when, I think it was Brian talked about, whether they work at a frontline labor position, or they're in a professional position, or they go to law school or whatever. One of the things we've all heard over the years is that when young professionals, new professionals go into jobs, they can't write. And business writing especially, I know that I see that. And so the fact that we're really emphasizing this at a very early level, I think it's just a great tool to get out there and have conversation around. And the last thing also is this is the connection between the partnership between Glenbard West and Hadley. I think that's another thing to really put out there in terms of telling our story, so that parents recognize that we have some very significant connections on the academic level, and it's not a haphazard, are you ready for a high school, kind of question. So in a nutshell, it's really how do we utilize this in terms of talking about the very significant things that are going on. Stephanie, I remember many years ago, about 4 or 5 at this point, in this very space, you talking about standardized report cards and how that was going to really shift how kids learn. And I think this is a great example of that. So I don't know how we use these, but I think this is not just meant to sit in this room tonight with nobody here to watch it. We have to get it out there. Other than us, sorry. Not that we're nobody, but really sharing the message.
At LLT last week, we even had a bit of this discussion when we were reviewing some of the feedback from the language arts, the Common Core standards for the language arts, and making the connections to the other content areas. And the Hadley teachers who were on LLT were sharing, you know, what they're doing in their PLCs, how to find the time. That was a note that I had for you, Kristen, how to find time for them to meet with the other content area teachers, and that they talked about using the literacy specialist as that connection between the two groups. But because we had a 7th grade literacy, science, and social studies teacher, and just taught and math. And then talking about how they, as a 7th grade, do that, but needing more time to be able to get that message into the other grade levels. So I'm, as a parent, I'm thrilled to see that this is happening, but as a parent, who's connected, I know that this is going on. I see this. I'm here, and I'm reading it, and it's helping parents to understand how this connection is being made, because it's not just here at Hadley. It's at the elementary buildings, too, with the shortened, with the schedules of, you know, science and social studies not being part of a daily routine the way they are here at Hadley, and how we're bringing literacy into all of those classrooms across the board. It'd be interesting, though, Stephanie, what were some, I mean, that there were gaps at West when they get to West in writing and note-taking and...
Yeah, I think it was the types. Like, they just, we wanted to be consistent, so with, like, Cornell notes, that's something that we're all trying to use. So I know it was that. You probably know more about that.
Well, and we had parents who would come back and say that their students, that their child wasn't ready for the rigorous writing that they encountered as a freshman. And it wasn't just about writing in the English classroom. It was more specifically about having to write in, you know, the social studies as well. Science classes. So we knew that that was definitely a focus, and again, the Common Core has sort of been an instrument that's allowed us to provide and expect rigorous writing in the content areas as well. And Stephanie's right, they talked about note-taking, and then there's always the idea of the homework load as well.
Well, but I mean, I think that we've really seen a change over the last couple of years. So I'm always amazed when I hear a parent say, well, my child never has homework. And I'm like, well, who are their teachers? Because my kids come home with homework for the last 3 years, every night, a fair amount. Not too much, not too little, but an appropriate amount of homework. So I don't know, you know, there's some missing translation, but I'm seeing more of the assignments that from science that are have a literacy component and tying it in. So it's nice to see that these organizers are coming, you know, are helping them. But I know, John, we always talk about, are we teaching to the test? Are we teaching them things that are going to help them score better on the ISATs? Or are we giving them, working on skills that are something that they're going to take beyond, you know, beyond the test?
Well, I think what you heard tonight was there wasn't a whole lot mentioned about ISAT other than, you know, that kind of created a need. But these formats are good writing. They're transferable, and they really have very little to do with a writing test or writing on demand. Mm-hmm. It's just really about good writing.
Yeah, I think I like the fact that it was tied to Glenbard West, especially since there's such a drive in high schools to drive these AP courses, right? So I like that was being tied to that. And while I'm not a fan of the ISAT on that, the ACT test is obviously, unfortunately, a very important test to many people's ability to get into school. So I thought it was interesting that you guys looked at that data as opposed to ISAT data, because that's really, you know, a higher level, and it's sort of an end goal of where kids are trying to go. And I was curious about the ACT data. So you were able to look at our kids going into Glenbard West or Glenbard West as a whole and how their kids performed on the ACT test with regards to the writing section. What were you able to do?
That actually came back from Jeff. It was more from Glenbard West back to Hadley about what they had noticed in their students and how our students at Hadley did across the board.
So they were able to say, you know, our kids have done better, but the data that you were able to see from Jeff was really for Glenbard West itself.
Right.
And I'm not familiar with the rating. I thought I heard you say that the kids weren't scoring above a 4. What's the rating scale for that test? Is it 1 through 5?
That's on the ISAT. On the ISAT, the score is maximum score is a 4. Mm-hmm. And our students very often score 3s, but that illustrious 4 is difficult. It usually comes down to that extension piece, which, as Chris pointed out, is about all good writing, is showing what you learned and what you understood in that conclusion of the piece, not just for performing well on the ISAT, but performing well in your classroom and in high school on any of the writing components related to SAT 2.
So maybe I missed this, but is the ACT structured this way? Is that how they... Okay, I missed that. This isn't based off of the way they score or review the ACT to make sure there's a beginning, middle, end, and all that.
The ISAT, yeah.
It's on ISAT.
But ACT would also, I mean, you're talking about basic organization and structure of writing. So idea and organization is one of the key factors in any standardized rubric that's used for judging writing.
Yeah. I mean,
it's one of the components.
It's one, right. And, you know, I'll always push the, maybe if we understand the ACT and see if the framework's exactly the same or a little different.
Now I don't know how much we're looking at it yet, but we look at the Explore test, which is the precursor, the eighth grade precursor to ACT. Mm-hmm. We can see how our students are scoring, and we can see in the areas of writing they'll outline where each of the criteria are and how we scored in those areas.
Okay. And then I'm not sure I understood the difference between this rubric and this one.
Well, probably for the content areas that it was using. I think one at the top is for the health curriculum, and the other one is for the science curriculum. I think I believe science.
Okay, so each one has a template, and then there's just...
Right, and those sort of, again, to create a universal tool where you see it's still all of them have the beginning, middle, and end, but then the actual criteria that we're scoring for could be different depending on what the content is.
Okay, and then I noticed the ICANN statements do not have an advanced component to them. Is there a reason for that, or, you know, when you look at the...
I think she created that for me because I teach a lot of the ELL students this year, and I wanted to be able to give them something that they could understand and read and be able to follow. So it's not so that they couldn't advance, but the more simplified I can give it to them, the better it is and the better they understand.
Now, I mean, I like the idea. I think one of you guys said it, that this kind of puts it in their language and gives them ownership. But, you know, I can introduce an idea and start to use the vocabulary and all that. I just, you know, it'd be good to have an advanced section too, just to, if you guys know this. And then this is more out of curiosity. You know, I think this is great. Like to see more writing and the organization and all that. And one of our learner characteristics is creativity. How do you get kids to sort of think outside of, here's a story, here's my organization, but be creative about it? Is that teachable or is that in the kid?
Well, because we're a sixth grade district where we use the six grades of writing, which ideas from organization, and the one component of that really focuses on creativity is voice. And the idea of no matter what kind of piece you're writing, bringing your point of view or your personality through in the writing. So even when students are writing a persuasive piece and using a graphic organizer like that or an informational piece, we are still looking for the idea that they're bringing their different perspective, their unique voice to that piece of writing. We don't do as much creative writing as we used to do. Of course, we have the narrative where kids are allowed to pick an event and write about an event of personal importance or personal memoir. But what we're hoping happens is that if we develop the pattern and the format of good writing and making sure the kids understand that it has to have that beginning, middle, and end, what they are able to do with that is up to them, is up to their thinking and to their to the assignment that they have been charged with. For instance, when Brian talked about RAP, the role, audience, format, topic, very often that's open to student choice. If you're presenting a paper and you're able to choose your role or the audience, and normally the format is chosen for you, and your own topic, you can be very creative about that. For instance, if I might choose to be writing about the Bill of Rights, and I might be one of the homes where the soldiers are quartered at my house because of the... And I could assume that role of the homeowner that has to support those soldiers and present a letter to the president convincing them otherwise. So I think there's creativity and options within that, but I think if we don't have the students understand the format or the organization that's required, that voice gets lost. A paper is only as really as good as your ideas in your organization, and once you have that, you can make it your own.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, or the combination. I'm an engineer, so I always have difficulties when people wanted me to analyze a story for symbolism or writing, and I said I don't want to do that, I just want to read the story. So, I like seeing that combined. You know, I think if I remember high school, I think they had like some combination language arts history classes where you'd see it kind of melding together. I think more so in college, I had like an engineering law and writing class. And so for me, my personality or learning type, really liked that because it was concrete, something I could relate to and apply together. So it's really cool to see it now trickling down to the junior high level.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, and thanks for hosting also, Dr. Greenfield.
You're welcome.
Very much. All right, under action items, our consent agenda, are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
I just have a comment on the personnel report. I had some questions early in the week, and I emailed back and forth to Lori, and she answered them for me, and just wanted her to give her a credit for that.
Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I'm sorry, I had a question. Is it the closed minutes? Is that in this consent agenda?
Mm-hmm.
So is this the final version that everyone put out?
This is the final version that I have put in the blue sheets in front of you and that you saw earlier in the week.
So I assume you got enough people to say this is the right version.
We've had two versions.
Mm-hmm. This is the second one.
And I've asked for feedback on both of those.
Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes item number one, human resources personnel report, employment recommendation, leaves of absence, resignations. Item two, finance, facilities, and operations. Item three, other members, including board meeting minutes from January 9th, 2012, regular meeting closed session, January 23rd, 2012, regular meeting, January 23rd, 2012, regular meeting closed session, semi-annual review of closed session minutes, and the destruction of closed session audio recordings. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Ellis?
Yes.
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations, class size targets. The administration is recommending that the board approve its recommendation for class size targets that was discussed by the board at its January 23rd, 2012 meeting. May I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented?
I just have one clarification, really. The schools that have not made the AYP, what schools are those?
The only school that we report right now is Churchill.
Right, but for purposes of the class sizes.
If we were to, for the purpose of class size, we'd probably be only considering at this time Lincoln and Churchill, but we would need to see Lincoln's results this year.
So we're only, as of right now, we're
only considering Churchill.
Okay.
Hadley, because class size, even though they haven't made AYP, their class sizes vary across the content. It's really very difficult to, you know.
But we accepted, the one note I made to myself on this was that we accepted an earlier agreement of lower class size targets so you could do staffing earlier and not wait, correct?
Correct.
All right.
Is there a motion on the table?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
Yeah. Any more discussion?
Sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. Maureen, did you get motion and second?
Okay.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Kendall?
Yes.
Mr. Bondurant?
Yes.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Yes. Had the auditorium sound system replacement. At its January 23rd, 2012 meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to approve the purchase of a sound system from USAC at a cost of $27,206, with an additional estimated cost of $5,000 for the installation of sound dampening devices. May I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
Just curious, what will be the first production that we'll get to see this being used?
The Churchill Talent Show is at the end of April, April 27th, I believe.
I'm not too sure if it's going to be able to be completed over the spring break or not.
Yeah.
Maybe not. So it may actually be a fall
Because it won't be ready for the musical for Charlie Brown. Yeah.
They can't work in there while the kids are there, so it has to be during
right.
the time.
So I would venture to say that if anything, it's going to be a spring break, if we can actually mobilize that quickly. If not, it'll have to be a couple
properties. I was here for the Lincoln...
Township?
Yeah, the township. School Junior High Rock or something. And they had a spotlight. Is that belong to someone, or is that belong to school?
Well, we have spotlights here, but they're we typically don't use them because they are also dangerous. They're on that list of things to be replaced in the future. So it's possible that Lincoln rented it.
Yeah, that looked pretty high tech.
Then they probably rented it.
I think the lighting and other things are like in the cities too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess I was just assuming like the overhead stuff that you mean spotlights there.
Yeah.
I know last time we rented, I don't know if that was a direct cost for us or the group or whatever, but I'd love to get it as soon as possible. If they could do it after 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Or
well, it's a question of getting the equipment, too. We're talking about a play that's going to be March 16th.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the March play. Okay. I'm just saying.
It'll get in as soon as we can get it.
Right, yeah. I mean,
I just don't know if Churchill...
It's a matter of, you know, now that we have a pool, then we'll be able to start initiating the purchase order and start mobilizing and getting that people's contractor schedules.
Once we have a group.
So we have to remember the pods are classrooms, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like we have an auditorium like Glenbard West, which is separate and not used. We teach in there.
Right, that's why I was saying it has to be when the kids aren't in the building.
Well, which is 4 o'clock every day.
Yeah, I mean, getting it in when kids aren't in there is not a problem.
Okay, can we roll call, please?
Mr. Contreras?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Superintendent's report.
I just have two things I want to remind the board about. March 6th is Open Meetings Act training, and I know that Sam has completed his training, but every other board member is required by law to complete that training, and that training is going to be offered at Marquardt on March 6th. Only one board member has responded to that possibility, and it's a great opportunity to get it done and out of the way. It has to be done this year.
What are the other options?
You can sign up online. I did actually sign up online already, but then because I was going to do it online, and I have a username and all that already through ISB. But then when I found out it was local, I just signed up to go and do it.
Mm-hmm. He went to a workshop. So you can do it online, and they just walk you through. It's a tutorial, and then you just answer the questions. That's the first way that Maureen and I did our training was online.
What's the ramification if a board member doesn't do it?
Well, we have to post publicly the names of the board members who do the training. So I think that while there's no legal recourse in terms of punitive response, it's just a posting of the names of those board members who did participate.
So it's a legal requirement, but there's no...
The publishing. There's no punitive consequence associated with not doing the training.
Gotcha.
I'm sure we'll all get it done.
Pardon me? What's the cost to the district?
I don't think there was any cost to that training. Is there a cost on March 6th? I don't think so. That's part of our membership. The other dates that I wanted to remind you and ask you to give me some feedback on relate to our board self-evaluation, and Tuesday, May 15th or Monday, May 21st are dates that I have tentatively I have commitments from Barb Tony, who is our IASB field rep, to conduct our self-governance review process in closed session. And so if you could let Maureen know as soon as possible which May 15th, that's a Tuesday, and May 21st is a Monday. So we can schedule that and commit her time.
So it's like a special meeting?
It's a special meeting. It will be devoted just to the results of our self-evaluation. That's it for my report.
Thank you. Any board reports? By members of the board.
We had LLT last week. We worked on a learner characteristic PowerPoint that is going to be shared with the staff. And as I mentioned before, we reviewed the feedback from teachers from the language arts departments on the Common Core standards, and it was, we were set up in tables, so everybody was sort of looking at a different set of grades. And it was interesting because, like I said, being here at Hadley and talking about this, there was a lot of discussion about the opportunity at the middle school to have, you know, cross-curricular feedback, discussion, and how to how to synthesize more of the content areas with the writing. So I'm giving the plug to you, Chris, to find them some more time so that they can meet and talk about it. Again, we had the seventh grade group, so it was a little bit different. But, you know, again, there's only so many hours in the day. And while they all really talked about how they appreciate the time with their PLCs and at their team meetings, it's that trying to get everybody together time, and I don't know if they can do it at SIP. I don't know how else to give them that time to be able to do that without bringing subs into the classroom so that they can meet during the school day. But it was actually very interesting feedback, again, once on the Common Core.
Went to the Francis.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Yeah, so that was very good again. There were a couple seminars on a lot of the new laws that are working their way or past, I guess. Mm-hmm. But in fact, bargaining and other types of interactions. And there's a very interesting one on the FOIA process, and lots of interesting examples that were presented, and very interesting that, you know, basically said even communications with personal cell phones or personal email accounts between board members discussing board business could be FOIA-able.
Mm-hmm. And have been FOIA-able.
Yeah, so if you're doing that, you know, when in doubt, pick up the phone and call somebody. Because somebody could request that electronic piece of information gathered.
Thank you, Steve.
I did an online course from the ISB. I just recently completed it. School District Labor Relations, What Illinois Law Requires. And it was very interesting and very informative. And the book that Erica recommended to Ann that we all got was actually the basis of this class. It actually forced me to read it and read it again and review it. So it was very informative.
Good. Thank you, Stuart.
Also went to the Radford Conference, and I went. I did the Senate Bill 7, concentrated on most of the presentations on that. Also went to a RIF presentation as well, and learned many things I didn't know before, and it was very informative for me. And finally, I went to Lincoln Science Night, which was last Wednesday. And obviously, like the school, very well attended. My three daughters were fascinated by the flubber, the goop, the Insta snow, the Lego car races, and of course the new competition, the egg drop contest. Which, if anybody's a Modern Family viewer, mm-hmm. they had a piece on that that the kids really liked.
Good.
That's it.
Glad you could do that. Good. Last comment on the Frantic Conference. Again, every year there's a ton of good information. We have a couple of extra binders at the office. If there's a particular topic, we have a list of all the topics, so please feel free to go and either grab a binder or grab a section out that you want to take a look at. One of the sessions that Phyllis and I attended was the TRS and IMRF update. Both of us dropped jaw a little bit on some of the information that was shared about for administrative contacts and advance notice requirement that we are going to have to talk about. So some really important stuff that came out of it. Attended the LEND meeting with Ann on the 27th of January. Linda Riley Mitchell, who's the Chief Financial Officer for the Illinois State Board of Ed, presented the 2013 budget request. Had a lot of really good information for us. Peg Agnos will continue to update us on the pension reform. Daily Herald has run a couple of pieces in the last couple weeks on that. I've been kind of collecting for myself to stay connected to that. important information. The other takeaway for me for the LEND meeting, which is kind of interesting, John Moss and Lauren May, who were the federal liaisons for LEND, met with Congressman Roskam, and they talked about giving him kind of an update on DuPage County. And he said that, they said that he was surprised by the student demographics change in our districts relative to low-income students, that he was taken back by the shift and wanted more information around that. So I guess I'd just share that as an issue for the board to not be afraid of getting that voice out, letting our elected officials know what's going on in the districts, because they, you know, live in a little bit different world of issue and concern than certainly we do. Ours is much closer to home. So I thought it was good, and they're following up with him to provide a lot of good data so that, you know, hopefully he can keep that in mind as he continues to legislate. Last thing I want to mention is I want to thank the board for your support of the board letters, the president letters on the link. And I had a couple people stop me at McChesney, and they said to me, "You look familiar. Do I know you?" And I said, "I don't think so." I kind of have an airport face, like one of those faces that everybody thinks they know. And they said, "Oh, no, no, your face was on that letter." So I didn't know my picture was going to be on that. Thank you, Julie. But some good feedback that it's kind of a nice push out of information to the community. So I want to thank the board for supporting that. And Julie did a wonderful job of writing and editing this next one coming up, and I'll be sending that out tomorrow for people to review. So thank the board for supporting that. It's a good, seems to be a good communication link. Anything else? Okay. Discussion items.
Our first discussion item is recommendation for Compass Learning, the Odyssey proposal, and thank you to the board members who were able to get here a little bit early and see the presentation that was done by Compass Learning to give you an idea of what this software and internet link can do for us and for our students. And we're very excited about the opportunity that it may have for students both to be used during the school year, before, during school, after school, but also during the summer, and be able to access it from home. So we're very excited about this proposal and believe that the cost, while it seems high right as an outlay of money, on an annual basis is not a high cost to maintain, and is much, much less than what we're currently spending on summer school.
Mm-hmm. So is this, and I apologize, I did miss the presentation. So is this something that would replace summer school?
Well, we're thinking it might replace summer school. Our results from summer school have been much less than we anticipated and hoped for, both from attendance, performance, commitments of families to summer school. It just seems as though families have other things they want to do in the summer. And so we've just not seen, at a high cost, I mean, we've invested a good deal of training and staff to do summer school. But, you know, when you look at what you're getting back on your investments, it does not seem to match the dollars that we're spending. So this might be something that we would do in conjunction with a smaller, more focused summer school approach, but also be able to offer it to every student.
Right.
And, you know, right now summer school is limited to those students who qualify via their MAP scores, and we're not able to reach all the students who might benefit from having that extension over the summer.
And is this, I mean, and just so I understand, this is something that kids and families could use at home, right? It's not just, because I'm very supportive of those opportunities. I know there's been a big push, at least at the elementary building this year, and I've noticed with certain sites, certain math extras, a lot of extensions. And the teachers have made it a priority and, you know, kind of like part of, you know, home, you know, calling it homework, but homework for the kids to be able to do that as extra practice. So I know I'm seeing it used, and I've heard other families talk about these different applications that are out there. So if this is something that we think is going to work, I mean, obviously it's a sticker shock. When you first see it for something, for its use, I was surprised.
Mm-hmm. It's complete. It's aligned with students' individual MAP scores, and I think one of the things that, and Karen can talk more about, I thought one of the things that I thought was really impressive tonight was they take their MAP, and the next morning their learning plan that's unique to them is already online and ready to go. And so they can begin working on areas that they need to strengthen. And it's designed for even students who are doing very well on their MAP scores, but it, even within that, it identifies their weakest areas, and that's where they start, and then they extend beyond that.
Well, and it might be a good, it'll be a good way for parents to, it's hard for parents, it's hard for us to understand math. It's hard for us to understand what it's doing, what it's for. I mean, it's a test, it's an assessment, but how is that data used? As a parent, what can we do to help? And other than having that conversation with the teacher and, you know, at conferences, you don't know, but if there's something, so they're taking math 3 times a year, this is something that kind of can plug in 3 times a year to help them.
Very specific to their actual score.
Well, one of the questions I put on my notes, and I think Howard answered it, was I asked, are upgrades of the program expected annually? Do we pay for those? And he happened to mention that there was a school district that had just called him to say, look, we need the new Common Core piece, and that was included, he said. They didn't have to pay extra for that.
Updates that occur just happen as part of your subscription.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that $15,600 for maintenance includes that. Well, and if you amortize this over, I mean, you just divide it by the number of students who'll be able to use it. I mean, it's, I don't know, I didn't do it, but it becomes, you know, pennies on some level.
What Tara said, too, is true, because a lot of parents are looking for specific things they can do at home to help their kids that, you know, we'll have some online subscriptions that they can access at home.
Right.
This is something that would work pretty much in the
end. Yeah, I think that's an important selling piece to this.
Well, we want to start with teachers kind of creating some of their own things, but I think there's some great potential there that you referenced a little bit about from an assessment perspective, and just they've got this math unit coming up and, you know, give the kids some things and get some data back. Like, front load, repeat, I mean, there's a lot of
possibilities. Karen, talk about the ability to track progress of subgroups, that piece, because clearly that's an area that we have our eye on a lot of things, but, you know, that piece.
Well, I think we'll be able to do it at multiple levels. I think from a teacher's perspective, too, they'll have a greater sense of how specific kids are doing in that. And then as the data, he didn't spend a lot of time on it. He had that little teacher dashboard, and we'll be able to look at that. From a district perspective as well. The one thing that we're going to have to make sure is that that data gets pulled into NWA, because we haven't always needed some of this specific, it's been pretty, like student ID number and that, so we'll just want to be sure that those kind of moving forward are in there, so that it's talking to it, so that we can look at both.
Right, okay. Thank you.
I know the software is K-12. Do we have access through all that? Or do they limit us to this K-12?
You know, that's a good question, because she talked a little bit about they've got some math for primary and some of those other things. She mentioned something that they met with Glenbard West today, and one of a concern that West has expressed is that, for example, we use Read 180. They also use Read 180 as an intervention, and so, you know, by the time some kids get to high school, they've been on it here, and then they still aren't caught up to grade level, and they put it on, and then they're seeing kids kind of get burnt out on that, that they wanted, you know, not to overdo something in particular, and she felt that there might be enough, that it wouldn't be overdone. But I think because it would adjust for kids, hopefully
that's going to say that's higher level.
As they continue to grow, and they would experience a whole other setup. And she's showing me some high-level math that happens in sixth grade, and so there's some things on there, like ratios and proportions that
I was thinking a couple things. One, maybe there's an opportunity for our higher learning achievers to access that material. And then two, it's K-12. We use K-8. West uses 9-12. Is there an opportunity for
cost sharing.
Partnering
there. Mm-hmm.
I have it.
Yeah.
Could I have a
question?
What might be something to look at, and we did this with MAP a couple years ago with no luck. We tried to do it through the Glenbard Associate Districts, that if we all were using MAP, that we would get kind of a quantity discount, but it didn't work. I mean, we can certainly try to address that if as more of us are using Compass, because now we have several districts that are using it. But this initial fee wouldn't change. I mean, we'd have to be looking at the annual renewal or something like that.
And the high school's a year away.
Yeah.
They've got something else kind of expiring within the next year that they were going to kind of shift their dollars.
Is there any testing? Is there any standardized testing or any other measurement testing that we do that could be done on the software?
I wouldn't say standardized testing unless we decided we wanted to kind of create some kind of common assessment that we could grade.
But they didn't have something already. Can you take a math
like program
or an ISAT? Can you take a practice test or something?
Well,
testing program.
I thought they said that after you learn things, then there was.
Well, you can create.
They have quizzes. They have some of up there that the kids can take a quiz on what they found.
Mm-hmm. But it isn't math.
What did he call that? A learning path? That their individualized learning path? So maybe that's what you were thinking.
Yeah. And it has the ability for us to create common assessments later, but. The only other assessment I could, standardized like ITBS or COGAT or something like that, they're not aligned to that.
Purchased Renzulli, which has been connected to Renzulli Radio Sale with part of Gifted, but I'm not sure how it's going to kind of interface or if that's going to be just another decision of whether, and that Compass Learning looks at the weakest area and built that learning path. Renzulli takes the approach to look at their strength and keep it in their strength. That's just something they're starting to, I don't know. Because I had shared with him that we would be interested in something more for our bilingual students. They have Spanish for math only, and you know, we like
mm-hmm.
So, and that we might be
something for those. I think it's interesting. I like the concept that, you know, any student can access it. And you know, especially intrigued by using it as an alternative to summer school to help drive some participation.
Mm-hmm.
When will we know if this is going to be the substitute for that?
We will know after you take action.
Oh, I thought you were saying you haven't decided.
Well, I mean, we haven't decided because we don't have approval. And but if we have approval, we will move in that direction.
Okay. Thank you.
Howard mentioned too that District 93 just made the decision that Odyssey will be their primary mm-hmm. summer school, and so I will connect with them. He said they were going to kind of offer three levels, maybe doing an open lab type thing, and I've been talking with Katie McCluskey a little bit about you know what might be maybe do some things and you know, even maybe connecting with the Illinois library. You know, maybe like a shortcut for kids that it's easier to access or whatever.
We still will offer Camp Invention, and we're still going to offer Chinese enrichment programs, but we're looking at something that could be more targeted and more targeted and more expansive. And we don't think doing what we've done for the last 2 years is effective.
Karen. It's all grade levels?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. K.
Sorry. And it's accessible at school and at home?
Mm-hmm.
And at school, would you have to change the way the day looks now to fit it in? Or is that to the individual teachers? Or how is that going
to
work?
We leave it up to probably the grade levels to have those kind of conversations about it. It could be used like during targeted learning for a certain group of kids. They may build it in as an intervention. You know, I know some buildings on inclement weather day that sometimes they'll give that as an option. Kids can get on the computers to do some of that. But initially, I don't, you know, for us to try to say every child must be on it for 30 to 60 minutes, I don't really grab that time necessarily from. But teachers are asking, what's out there that I could, you know, my kids could start accessing? So I think maybe if I go through a center rotation.
That's what I was thinking. Probably start out at the center.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty doable if you're rotating kids through that.
I was just going to ask you, once a week type thing versus every day or every other day?
They're saying 30 to 45 minutes a week.
Right, in each subject area. So I think if you put it in as a rotation, I think it could be a conversation.
Yeah, in each subject area, you said.
Oh, and one other thing you said, is this the only software package of its kind in the market? Are there competitors or?
You know, I think there's a lot of, random kind of programs you can get that, people are kind of looking at and give their kids kind of work on skills or whatever. I would say that they draw around this, the interfacing with NWCA. We're already using that as a tool, and then it individualizes that path as opposed to teachers having to control that and take the time to create those. Not that they can't do that, but
this is the only product of its kind, like that is that closely aligned to that.
Yeah. Okay.
And I like the investment, the part where they said, not that they had the PhDs, but they had the people, they required teaching experience.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then they're talking about using the alliteration to help memorize some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
mnemonic devices, so you're mimicking classroom activity.
Right, right.
I thought it was brain-based design, she said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Okay, thank you, Karen.
Next item is a request to go to bid for summer capital projects, including elementary building paintings. We'd like to go ahead and bid the remainder three elementary buildings for painting. As you know, we did the model classroom last year, so there is one room in each of the other three elementary buildings that has been painted, and we'd like to get a bid for what it would cost to do the remainder of the three buildings and get that done in one summer.
This is for the common areas.
No, this is for the whole building. Like we did at Lincoln. We painted the
whole
building. No, we did the whole building at Lincoln.
I was going to say, I visited my new company's headquarters in Montreal, headquarters. They had some big fat boys.
I get to relax in those.
The engineers were relaxed.
I love it.
Okay, I'd keep up.
I said one of those.
Any questions on that? Just asking permission to go to bed.
Yeah, no.
Okay. And the final item is our proposed calendar for 2012-2013. Dan served on that committee. And I thank him for doing so, and Tara probably does as well. She was able to step off that committee this year. As I mentioned to you, there are just a few minor changes this year in the draft recommendation. Otherwise, it looks pretty similar. We know that, whenever we're in a negotiations year, it's possible that there could be a calendar change, and we would do an amendment in the fall should something during negotiations mandate that. But basically, we stayed with the same principles that we've been looking at for the last 3 years. That is to maximize the number of 5-day weeks to ensure that it maximizes our commitments and that it is it's good for kids. And we think this calendar works well by creating, compared to this year's calendar, which is a little bit unique in that we had winter break in the middle of a week, but we've created additional 5-day weeks for this year. We've reinstated President's Day, and that is going to be much to the happiness of many of our parents who I received calls from. Received one this afternoon from a parent who asked if we didn't honor presidents, what was going on with that. And so
next year.
I said next year. It looks like we might be reinstating it. So President's Day has been put back into the calendar, and we have added a SIP day on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving break and made the Wednesday before Thanksgiving break a non-student attendance day. We also added a SIP on the last day of student attendance, so there'll be a half day of student attendance on the 31st of May and then a SIP day in the afternoon with then a full institute day for teachers that following Monday. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead, John.
No, go ahead. The August 22nd, I'm assuming that's when Glen Burg West starts, right?
Everybody starts around that time, yes. I can't say that's the exact same day they start.
Hold on, I'll tell you, because I'm sure
they do.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the SIP day is 4 hours of mm-hmm. teacher. Did you guys give any consideration to combining a SIP day with a parent-teacher day?
We did. We looked at that. And we also looked at a possible full-day SIP. And each of those created challenges that became we all kinds of configurations trying to work through that, and that's why we looked at the SIP. Our solution was the SIP on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I just worried.
There were lots of conversations around that, trying to find the 8th SIP day, trying to find the right place to put it.
And I'm just worried that Monday the 19th, you know, people are just going to
Could
fall
be.
Off.
We'll have to monitor the attendance.
Yeah, John, we did have an attendance graph
mm-hmm.
For all of this. That was one of the things we wanted to look at to see if there was other opportunities. You know, President's Day was one. We wanted to look at some of these others. I think the parent-teacher conference day, another change is there's no school on that first day of parent-teacher conferences. So you won't, you know, have the late night conference and then your teacher, you know, a bit weary, but still, you know, pushing forward. So I think this will help that as well.
So in other words, it's not an SIP day on the day before the first parent-teacher conference.
The day of the first,
yeah.
Right.
I have the same concern that John has in terms of the Monday of Thanksgiving and then a half a day where we're going to have a drop in attendance. I think the same thing at the very end of the year, which will probably be even worse, where we have the Monday, the 27th off of May, and then we have an SIP day on that Friday. And, you know, so how does that impact us in terms of what's the number of children we need to have in school to get our state dollars? Does that impact us in that way?
I mean, just from my experience of sitting on
don't
committee,
okay.
I don't
That's all I
know.
Wondering.
I mean, we do, and I know there have been those discussions. I wouldn't be so concerned in terms of the May, the last day of school day. That day, I don't like the last, like the week.
Really? I get a lot of calls around that. Why are you even doing a half a day? The kids
no, but
out,
not,
blah, blah,
not
blah.
Well, they are too bad.
I mean, that's what I say. I agree.
This year
it's
we're
school
doing
day
a
they come to school.
Right. No, but what I'm saying is if, like, if the
right.
And it was like on a Tuesday. It was right, like we had Monday off, and it was right on a Tuesday. I mean, it was the way mm-hmm. because we ended up having emergency days because of the snowstorm. So that was some of the, you know, way
right.
some of those days.
But what we're saying is on this Friday, the 31st, this is an SIP day, so mm-hmm. it's a half-day dismissal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the last day of school.
Right.
So we used to, if you recall, we used to have a half hour.
10 minutes.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I don't think it's going to matter. I still think that our attendance is going to be.
But I think the attendance issue is going to be the week of Thanksgiving.
I do too.
Not in May. That's the day that.
And we did look at the data for that. And, you know, because we were talking about moving this way, that way, and we were like, no matter what, the day before a full day off, there is a drop.
Well, what we actually rationalized during that time was that we had terrible attendance on Tuesday of last year, but good attendance on Monday. Attendance was normal on Monday, horrible on Tuesday, and so we thought maybe people leave on Tuesday. They don't mind being in school on Monday because they're not leaving for their holiday.
Right.
So the data didn't support necessarily what you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm. I think if you have kids in high school, though, and in 41, they go to school all the way through
right.
Wednesday.
They do.
Right, mm-hmm. they do. They don't have Wednesday.
So that's an incentive to stick around. So mm-hmm. you guys looked at moving that S on the 20th
mm-hmm.
to the PT on the 1st.
We looked at that, and we looked at making a full day SIP. And there were dilemmas with all of those,
mm-hmm.
with both of those configurations. And so this is the recommendation that we arrived at.
And I have to say, I mean, you know, you guys kept a lot of the, you know, Monday on a Monday off for Columbus Day or Martin Luther King Day, those days, and then having an institute day next to it. And I think that at least this year again, I have not been hearing the complaints that we seem to hear for so long about, you know, their kids are never in school. Because I think when we have those days off that way, families maybe are smarter about their time. Kids are, you know, I know teachers have said how much they've appreciated that, reinvigorating themselves on that Monday, and Tuesday they come in and they're doing these institute days and the kids come back. That's been a very positive thing. But as I, you know, have said year in and year out, we do not base a calendar because people want to take a vacation. It's about school and learning and teaching. And
we think this calendar, it has creates a great deal of continuity of instruction and meet those principles. I think we probably have more five-day weeks than any of our counterparts around us. I mean, we could, you know, collect and see what other calendars look like, but the move from a SIP day on the week before, the Friday before Memorial Day, that very, you're saying you don't like having it at the end of the year, but we felt like by moving it to the last day, it created one more five-day week of instruction.
Mm-hmm. Earlier in the calendar, yeah. Right.
Well, at the end of the year when we think that's really important and... Mm-hmm.
No, it's a Rubik's Cube. There's no question about it. You know, so I was glad to see the, you know, consistency of the five-day weeks. I was glad to see parent-teacher conferences were not changed. It was huge for me. Mm-hmm. We need to do them early in the process. All the PBIS stuff says let's do them early. So, you know, I think it's never perfect, but, you know, I think it's well done.
And this is mirroring the major holidays and such as the high schools?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Uh-huh. We have one institute day the same, but the others are not.
Right. Are you guys mentioning the fall institute day? The feeder one?
Well, we have it on the calendar, but okay. We've yet to be able to do a joint institute day.
So we're going to go to approval on the 27th, our next meeting?
Correct.
Yeah, that'll be great because folks will want to know what the calendar is.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's it for discussion items.
Upcoming meetings, February 27th, 2012, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. at the Central Services Office. And March 12th, 2012, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. at Churchill School. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board? Is there anyone present who would like to address the board at this time for public participation? We are going to adjourn to closed session. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters: collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, and the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion. Second.
Roll call, please.
Ms. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes. No action. We will not be taking any action when we return from closed session. Thank you.